Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers, and $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Save big on your landscaping project now at Menards. Whether you're installing a patio or a new retaining wall, Menards has the blocks you need to get the job done right. We carry the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Stop in and get our 12-inch smooth patio block on sale now. Save big on concrete landscape blocks at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Brad Holder told law enforcement he owned a .40 caliber firearm. They never collected it. He told them he spent every weekend in Delphi conducting pagan rituals with a group that included animal sacrifice and human bloodletting, allegedly. They recorded his interview, and then the Delphi police recorded over their only copy of said interview, permanently destroying it. When tipsters called in reporting that Holder was posting pictures on social media of young girls appearing deceased with sticks placed around or over their bodies, I've seen the pictures myself. You can, too, if you do a little digging on the internet. The Delphi police, who had since come up with a really exciting name for themselves called Unified Command. I know. I wonder if they got, like, hats or coffee mugs or something made up. If we start calling ourselves this, we feel more official. I mean, it's like, it's so juvenile and pathetic. Unified Command marked each tip cleared, nothing further or alibi confirmed. The alibi they never actually verified. Brad Holder was never charged with any crime related to these murders, and I'm not here to tell you that he did anything with the girls. I'm just laying out the facts of the case. Let you connect the dots where you'd like to connect them. So I want to be clear about what this episode is and what this episode isn't. This is not about accusing anyone. Every person I'm going to discuss is presumed innocent. What this is about is the investigative decisions, the ones made by the people whose job it was to follow every lead and who chose not to. Because you can't understand what happened to Richard Allen without first understanding the suspects who were waved through the system before anyone ever looked his way. So, understand that going forward. Allegedly, in my opinion, all that inserted on everything here. On the day Abby and Libby went missing, while search teams were still combing the woods around the Monon High Bridge Trail, the law enforcement, they learned something about Abby Williams' personal life that immediately mattered. Abby had been in a secret relationship with a boy I'll refer to as LH. She'd been talking to him, meeting up with him, keeping it from her family. On the day she was murdered, according to the defense filings, Abby invited LH to meet her on the trails. He had school and declined. When officers pulled LH from class in Longsport and searched his phone, he texted his father two words: "She's missing." His father was Brad Holder. Within the first week of the investigation, the Carroll County Sheriff already suspected the crime scene had ritualistic elements. The FBI's behavioral analysis unit was evaluating whether the sticks at the scene related to pagan rituals. And on February 17, 2017, just 4 days after the girls vanish, Holder sits down for an interview and tells law enforcement exactly what they were already looking for. According to the defense filings, Holder admitted to being involved in a pagan tribe. He told officers he spent weekends in Delphi engaging in pagan rituals with Patrick Westfall and others, rituals that included animal sacrifice and human bloodletting. You know, like you do on the weekends. Watch the game, go do some bloodletting, sacrifice some animals. Why not? To Norse gods in the middle of Indiana. He admitted to owning a .40 caliber Smith & Wesson. A .40 caliber unspent round would later be found between the bodies of Abby and Libby at the crime scene. Again, I'm not saying they had anything to do with this. Why would I do such a thing? It doesn't exactly take a CSI investigator or even really a seasoned investigator. Or, I don't know, it takes common sense. Just a little smidge of it to go, maybe we should look here a little closer, just in for all intents and purposes. Not only to see if there's smoke or there's fire here with this, what appears to be smoke, for the sake of the investigation and the girls, but also for the sake of this individual as well. Because if you're going to carry out a competent investigation, and someone like this truly has nothing to be looked at for, you want to run that out and not leave it as a infinite question mark forever. But we sit with an infinite question mark. Why? And again, I'm not saying Holder has done anything. I'm saying he too, to a certain extent, has been a victim of an incompetent investigation that has left the question mark sitting over here to anybody that's looking at the case. If you have nothing to do with it, then let's legitimately clear the man. And just saying cleared doesn't mean cleared if you didn't actually run down any information. Law enforcement did not collect Holder's weapon. They did not search his phone. They recorded the interview, and then the Delphi Police Department recorded over their only copy before August of 2017. The only record that survived was a single page of narrative summary. A suspect with a direct connection to one of the victims who admits to practicing pagan rituals involving bloodletting, who owns the same caliber firearm as the round found at the murder scene, and the police erased the tape. The gun stayed in his home, his phone stayed in his pocket, and the only written record of what he told them fits on a single page. And they say that's all there is. And maybe there is. Maybe that's all there is. But I'm saying consider the context. Again, I am not saying Brett Holder had anything to do with this. I'm saying this is an incompetent investigation from the jump. Consider the context. Officers who examined the crime scene believed it was too complex for one person. The behavioral analysis unit of the FBI noted the perpetrator treated the two victims differently, suggesting familiarity with at least one girl. The Carroll County Sheriff thought the sticks were connected to pagan rituals from the very first day. Everything about the crime scene pointed towards a group with ritualistic practices and a connection to the victims. And here was a man sitting across the interview table describing exactly that group, a pagan tribe that practiced bloodletting, spent weekends in the same woods where the girls were found, and included the father of the victim's secret boyfriend. They erased his interview tape anyway. Whoops! And said it doesn't matter. Then came the alibi. Holder told officers he was at work at Liberty Landfill when the girls went missing. Officers visited the landfill and spoke with a HR employee named Susan Case, who provided a badge swipe printout showing Holder swiped out of work at 2:45 p.m., 30 minutes after Libby's bridge guy video was recorded. Case invited the officers to reveal surveillance footage to confirm whether Holder was physically present during his shift because, surprise, surprise, anyone could take a card and swipe it out if one asked. This is how it works in some places on the time clock, on the shift clock. If you're unfamiliar, familiarize yourself. It's not super scientific, and people can clock you in and clock you out. But hey, there's a camera, so we can at least confirm this, right? And of course they're going to go check the camera to make sure that no one else swiped for Brad. Because if somebody was, you know, wanting to get away with something and appear to be somewhere else and have an alibi, one might ask someone else to do a little swiping for them. You just want to make sure that that didn't occur for the sake of Holder. So this story doesn't continue to go on indefinitely. So you want to make sure, you know, cross your T's, dot your I's. Well, in Delphi with the police department, T's and I's just simply don't exist in the equation. We just don't work with T's and I's around here. We find them to be too distracting. They seem to, the crossing and the dotting. We're not a department of crossers or dotters. We're just go-getters. You know, kind of seems like how it operates, you know? So, what happened when they went and looked at the security footage? They didn't go and look at the security footage that was offered to them. No. So, of course, they must have gone and talked to, like, other employees just to, like, gauge it, right? What did they... Oh, they didn't! They did not go and talk to other employees. They did not ask whether anyone else could have used Holder's badge, even though clearly they could have. Unified Command, as the Delphi police force like to start calling themselves because of their small appendages inside of their pants, in my opinion, marked Holder as cleared. Years later, when Allen's defense team finally deposed Case, they discovered Holder did not have exclusive custody of his employee badge on the day the girls went missing. The landfill ran continuous operations where a single person's absence would be immediately noticed, but nobody checked. The alibi that cleared Brad Holder was a badge printout. The officers refused to actually verify with the video that was offered to them. Again, you know, we talk about incompetence in this case. An incompetence, again, is something where you're trying your best to do something, but your inexperience is not allowing you to get there. I don't know if that's what's going on here. I mean, it seems like something else, very much so, because when you're literally offered, hey, you know, that's what this printout shows, but we got video. Let's just check the video just to make sure. Cross the T, dot the I. Oh, wait. You guys don't use I's and T's, right? You're just go-getters. So why do that? Why make sure that the evidence actually stacks up? I guess that's the question. It's either utter incompetence or ambivalence to the case. Or somebody doesn't want somebody to figure something out and connect dots that go in a specific direction. Why is that? Where does it lead? I don't know the answer to that question. And it really feels like Delphi has a vested interest in you not knowing either, or me, or anyone, for that matter. After the initial interview, according to the defense filings, tipsters repeatedly called in identifying Holder as a person of interest. They reported him posting images on social media of young girls appearing deceased with sticks placed over their bodies. I know, it seems insane. Number one, why would you be doing this? Even why would you be doing this in general, I guess, is the question. And if children recently died in this sort of a situation, and let's say you had those posted earlier, for whatever reason you may have something like that posted, why wouldn't you be taking that shit down pretty quick? Like, I don't want to look like I'm some monster. It's fucking weird. An ISP trooper named Winters reviewed the tips in Holder's social media and found what he described as concerning similarity between the murders and the content Holder was posting. Why? Because to a human being, there are concerning similarities there in, I think, most people's opinions. Winters found similarity between the stick formation on Abby's body and a bind rune that Holder had tattooed or drawn on his own hand. A combination of the Norse Gibo and Iso runes, which Holder himself described during an interview. Holder's social media also showed him holding guns and homemade knives. Winters recommended further investigation. His superiors declined, claiming Holder's alibi had been cleared by the FBI. Winters pushed back and urged ISP to conduct its own independent investigation. No further action was actually taken, nor can we confirm that he was actually cleared by the FBI. Again, my opinion. In 2018, according to the defense's filings, Holder created and displayed a painting of Odin hanging upside down, right leg tucked behind the left. This is how Abby's body was positioned at the crime scene, according to the defense expert on ritualistic killings. The painting also featured a red few rune, the same symbol that, according to defense filings, appeared in blood on a tree near where the girls were found. Nothing to see here. Officers continued finding social media posts from Holder that, in their own words, mimicked the crime scene. And still nobody interviewed him again. Nobody collected the gun. Nobody searched the phone. Tips kept coming in and the system kept marking them cleared. The fuck is going on here? Again, nothing illegal about doing any of those things. Creepy and weird. And look, there's people out there that mimic horrible scenes that had nothing to do with the actual crime. Could that be what's going on here? Maybe. I don't know the answer to that question. It is worth stepping back and asking what would have happened if any one of these investigative steps had actually been taken, if the officers had reviewed the landfill surveillance video when it was offered, if the interview tape hadn't been erased, if someone had collected the .40 caliber weapon and tested it against the round found at the scene, if Westfall's alibi had been checked before 6 years had passed and his son's memory had faded, if anyone had followed up on the social media post or the trooper's recommendation, we will never know the answers to those questions because the investigation chose not to ask them. And that is a failure that belongs to the institutions, not to Richard Allen. And honestly, not to these other folks in question here who keep having their names drug into this. If an investigation had been done properly, maybe we could figure this out. Maybe we could truly, as a society, clear these folks. And criminally, they have been, well, cleared. I think not investigated is really more of the operative word, at least not to the extent that satisfies most people's opinions. Holder's associate, Patrick Westfall, had his own interview on February 19th of 2017. Westfall told officers he was a religious leader for local pagans. He wore a necklace representing his efforts to pledge the Vinlanders, a pagan social club. He told law enforcement he knew the woods where the girls were murdered very well. He reported knowing the girls. Law enforcement did not record that interview either. Only a 5-paragraph narrative survived. There's no indication in the record, according to the defense, that officers marked Westfall whether he owned a .40 caliber firearm. His phone was also not searched. His alibi that he was home with his minor son went completely unchecked for over 6 years. When Allen's defense team finally forced a reexamination of Westfall in August of 23, his son could not remember whether he was home with his dad that day. Westfall's phone was finally collected, but according to the defense filings, he deleted data before turning it over. Westfall has never been charged with any crime related to these murders. And here's where the stories begin to shift. Holder told police in 2017 that he never actually met Abby. In August of 23, when Allen's defense team pushed for a reexamination, Holder told law enforcement he met her once. In a 2024 deposition, he said twice, with at least one of those encounters occurring at Westfall's home shortly before the murders. According to the defense filings, a man who initially denied knowing the victim gradually admits to meeting her multiple times, including at the home of his pagan associate in the weeks before she was murdered. If that were the only inconsistency, it would be worth a hard look. Combine it with everything else, the destroyed tape, the uncollected gun, the unverified alibi, the social media posts, the paintings, the rune tattoo, it forms a pattern that any competent investigation would have pursued aggressively. And then there's the statement that should have really changed everything. In 2018, according to the defense filings, Holder told his wife he had a fight with Westfall because Westfall wanted to up from animal slaughter to a different kind of sacrifice. Then Holder allegedly told her that Westfall allegedly killed Abby with others, told her to keep her mouth shut about it, allegedly. That statement is in the court filings. It was presented to the trial court. The jury never heard it. The judge excluded it along with everything else about Holder and Westfall. You know, nothing to see here. And again, people can say shit to other people, but in this context, in this thing, it's fucking weird and horrible. What is going on here? These folks don't necessarily seem like high-ranking people that are being protected because of who they are. What I suspect is they are the gatekeepers to people that go far beyond them, that have far more power and a far greater interest in not having anyone look their way. Again, my opinion, my gut, and I'm not saying Holder and Westfall have anything to do with this. But when you just look at the facts and say them out loud, yeah, I know that whole using your brain thing gets tricky. But when all the authorities are sitting here telling you there's nothing there, called crazy making behavior. It makes the people that actually use their brain and question these things and go, what? You didn't do this? You didn't do that? You stopped the... And they look at you like, yeah, of course we did. We don't need to do that. No, you really do need to do that. No, we don't. It's gaslighting. It's crazy making behavior. It's when you shut people down who are questioning obvious things and telling them that they're... Why would we do that? We're truth seekers, right? Go-getters. Who has time to cross T's and dot I's when you're out there getting them? By the time Richard Allen was charged in October of 2022, the investigation had lost or destroyed interviews with two of its most promising alternative suspects. It had refused to collect their weapons, refused to search their phones, declined to verify an alibi that later fell apart under basic deposition questions, and ignored years of tips and social media behavior that mirrored the crime scene, not because the evidence against these men was weak, but because nobody with the authority to act was willing to actually do the work. That's where my question comes in. Why? That's the foundation upon which Richard Allen's prosecution was built, not on the strength of a case against Allen, but on the wreckage of an investigation that should have looked elsewhere. Think about the totality of what the defense documented in the court filings. The suspect whose son was dating one of the victims, a 40 caliber weapon that matches the round found at the scene, never collected an interview tape, destroyed an alibi verified by a badge swipe that officers refused to confirm was available, surveillance footage, social media posts depicting dead girls with sticks, Mark Cleared, a trooper who raised the alarm and was told to stand down, a painting that mirrors the crime scene in specific documented ways, and a statement made to a wife that his associate killed one of the victims with others, Any one of those facts standing alone would justify a serious investigation. I've seen people be convicted on far less. Take Richard Allen, for example. Convicted on far less. Taken together, they represent one of the most documented investigative failures in modern murder case history. And the jury heard none of it. That's your Delphi Police Department, protecting and serving. Abby and Libby deserved investigators who would follow the evidence where it led, even when it led somewhere uncomfortable. What they got instead was a system that stopped looking the moment looking got hard. And the man who paid for that failure was the one who came forward voluntarily and told the truth about being on the trail. More on that next. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue to work our way through this case. We'll continue our conversation there. I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Detective Tony Liggett told a judge that witness Sarah Carbaugh described the man she saw walking away from the crime scene as muddy and bloody in a blue jacket. Remember that. Muddy and bloody and in a blue jacket. According to the defense's appellate findings in her actual 2017 interview, surprise, Carbaugh said the man was muddy. There was no mention of bloody. And he's wearing a tan jacket. A bloody man in a blue jacket matches bridge guy. A muddy man with a tan jacket does not. That difference is not a minor discrepancy. It is a difference between a witness who corroborates your theory and a witness who undermines it. And according to the appellant's brief, it was not the only thing Liggett got wrong in the probable cause affidavit that launched the entire case against Richard Allen. The search warrant for Allen's home, car, and electronics was issued on October 13th of 2022. Everything the state built against Allen, the gun, the bullet comparison, the Carhartt jacket, the arrest itself, and every confession that followed traces back to this warrant. And the warrant is bad. The tree is poisoned from the root, and according to the defense, Liggett's affidavit was built on omissions and misstatements that painted a picture the actual evidence did not support. Give me your thoughts in the comment section as we work through this on Substack and YouTube. The links are in the descriptions. So here's what happened in September of 22. The misfiled Dullin report was finally discovered, and law enforcement investigated Richard Allen for the first time in 5.5 years on October 13th. Allen was re-interviewed by Liggett and another investigator. Allen was cooperative. He confirmed he'd been on the trail on February 13th, 2017, said he walked to the first platform on the bridge to watch fish, said he saw three girls, told them he didn't know what he'd been wearing that day. Could have been a Carhartt. Could have been a sweatshirt. He denied being bridge guy. When confronted with the photo from Libby's phone, Allen said plainly that if the video was taken with the girl's phone, there was no way it could be him. He also told them he didn't see anyone else on the trail, specifically not bridge guy. When investigators pushed harder, according to the defense, Allen corrected them, reminding them he'd said it could have been a sweatshirt, not necessarily a Carhartt. He pointed out that everyone in the community had been looking at the bridge guy photo for years. To him, it didn't even look like the man was wearing a Carhartt. Allen even challenged them. Good luck finding anything that points to that. He eventually had to get up and walk out at the end of the interview. He'd been living in the same small town the entire time, cooperating when asked. That same day, Liggett applied for the search warrant. And in his affidavit, according to the appellant's brief, Liggett told the judge that Betsy Blair described the man she saw on the bridge as wearing a blue jacket and jeans. He lied to get a search warrant. What Liggett left out was the rest of Blair's description. That the man was in his 20s or early 30s, youthful, medium build, with a brown poofy hair, a description that does not match a 44-year-old man with closely cropped hair. Blair's sketch, which she rated 10 out of 10 for accuracy in 2017 and 9 out of 10 in 2019, depicts someone who looks nothing like Richard Allen. But when you just grab a little piece here and a little piece here and say, hey, based on this, I'd like this warrant, and you misinform the judge, you might just get that warrant if that judge doesn't do their own homework. Because the judge never saw the sketch, and the judge never heard the full description. So the judge couldn't push back and go, yeah, we don't give warrants to search people's homes unlawfully that really don't have probable cause, because what you're bringing to me as probable cause, what you're bringing to me is saying this is a good enough reason to search this person's home. What you're saying, the reasoning, the crux of it is not it at all. You're lying. You're withholding pieces of information that would discredit your whole reason for trying to get this warrant. And if you were to say those aloud, you probably wouldn't get that warrant. But if you just don't tell the judge, are you lying? That's called lying by omission. To an idiot, you may think, oh, I didn't lie. But when you're not sharing the whole truth, that is called lying by omission. In my opinion, and the opinion of those of us who practice common sense, the judge only heard that Blair saw a man in a blue jacket and jeans, which describes half the male population of Indiana on any given day. Liggett told the judge that Allen parked his black 2016 Ford Focus at the old CPS building, which he allegedly omitted was that Blair described the car she saw parked there as resembling a 1965 Ford Comet with sharp edges and a nondescript color that was specifically not black. Her sketch of the car looks nothing like a Ford Focus hatchback. A second witness, Terry Wilson, described the same car as the purple PT Cruiser or a small SUV-type vehicle. Neither description matches Allen's car. Interestingly, the defense notes that Liggett did include Wilson's inconsistent description in the affidavit. Purple PT Cruiser is not a black Ford Focus either. The point, the defense argues, was never that witnesses identified the car as Allen's. It was that a car was there, suspiciously parked. But what the judge did not know was that the only witness who also saw a bridge guy on the bridge, Blair, gave a car description that excluded Allen's vehicle. Then there was Carbro. Liggett told the judge Carbro saw a man in a blue jacket who was muddy and bloody. According to the defense, Carbro actually said tan jacket, muddy, no mention of blood in her 2017 interview. And Blair had told Liggett directly that the man she saw on the bridge was not the same person Carbro described walking on 300 North ISP. Itself released a public statement in 2019 acknowledging those were two different men. The agency that employed Liggett had publicly declared these were different people. And yet, according to the defense, Liggett's affidavit presented them as though they were describing the same man in a continuous timeline leading to Allen. Mold the evidence to where it serves you, I guess. Finally, the clothing. According to the appellant's brief, Liggett claimed Allen admitted to wearing a black or blue Carhartt jacket with a head covering, linking him visually to Bridge Guy. The defense argues Allen actually told investigators he didn't know what he was wearing that day, that it could have been anything from a Carhartt to a sweatshirt. When the investigators pressed, Allen reminded them he'd said it couldn't have been a sweatshirt. And when Allen's wife confirmed he owned a blue Carhartt in 2022, she also told investigators he'd purchased it a couple of years ago, which had been years after the 2017 murders. Had the judge known Allen simply admitted owning a blue or black coat, as does probably every 50-year-old man in rural Indiana, the connection to Bridge Guy would have been pretty much meaningless. The defense argues Those aren't inconvenient oversights. They argue Liggett misrepresented Blair's description of Bridge Guy, omitted that her car description excluded Allen's vehicle, changed Carbro's words from tan to blue, and added bloody, where she said no such thing, and attributed clothing statements to Allen that Allen never made. Every single alleged misstatement and omission pointed in the same direction, connecting Richard Allen to the man on Libby's phone, a pattern that, in the defense's view, goes beyond carelessness. The defense filed a motion to suppress the evidence seized from the search and requested a Franks hearing, a proceeding specifically designed to challenge a warrant when the defendant can show the affidavit contained deliberate or reckless falsehoods. Allen's attorneys supported their motion with depositions, police interviews, and reports. They cited the affidavit line by line. They filed a final motion urging the court to compare the affidavit directly with Blair's and Carbro's actual interviews. The trial court denied both the suppression motion and the Franks hearing. The defense notes that the court had been willing to schedule a Franks hearing when Allen was represented by different attorneys, but refused when the original defense team was reinstated. Allen's constitutional protections, the defense argues, should not depend on who his lawyers are. Without the search, there's no gun. Without the gun, there's no bullet comparison from state examiner Oberg, upon which the state arrested Allen. Without the arrests, there are no confessions from solitary confinement. The defense's argument is direct. The state's entire case is fruit of this warrant. And the warrant, they argue, is built on a version of the facts that could not survive contact with what the witnesses actually said. In 2022, ISP had no more evidence connecting Allen to the murders than they had in February of 2017, days after the crimes, when Allen walked into a parking lot and volunteered information. It was the same man, the same trail, the same time frame, the same car. The only thing that changed was how the evidence was framed in a probable cause affidavit. According to the defense, the warrant didn't rest on new evidence. It rested on old evidence presented in a new way, a new omitted way, with the inconvenient parts stripped out. The defense argues that if Allen, being on the trail within the same 2 hours the girls were abducted, were enough for a warrant, law enforcement would have obtained one for his home in 2017. It wasn't enough then. Without the omissions, the alleged misstatements, the defense argues it wasn't enough in 2022 either. Had the judge seen the full picture that Blair described, a young man with poofy hair who didn't look like Allen, that her sketch of the car doesn't match his Ford Focus, that Carbro said tan jacket and muddy with no mention of blood, that Blair and Carbro were describing different men according to ISP's own public statement, and that Allen never actually admitted to wearing the clothes Liggett attributed to them, the defense argues there would have been no warrant. No search, no gun, no arrest, no confessions, no case. Every domino that fell after October 13th, 2022, started with this affidavit. And every piece of evidence the jury eventually used to convict Richard Allen traces back to a document that, if the defense is right, told the judge a story the witnesses themselves would not recognize. The state disagrees. They argue the omissions were immaterial, that probable cause was sufficient based on Allen's own statements and the corroborating surveillance footage, and that even including the omitted information, reasonable probability still supported the search. The state points out that Allen himself told police where he parked, that Hoosier Haverstore video showed a car matching Allen's Focus heading towards the CPS building at 1:27 p.m., that Allen's wife confirmed they usually parked at that location when walking the trail. In the state's view, the omitted details about Blair's physical description and car description do not remove probable cause because the significance of that evidence was never about a positive identification. It was about placing a car at the scene and a man on the bridge during the relevant time frame. But here's the problem with that argument, at least as the defense frames it. The probable cause affidavit doesn't just place Allen on the trail. It connects him to Bridge Guy. Liggett's conclusion was not that Allen was merely present in the area. It was that Allen is the individual depicted on the Monon High Bridge from the video taken from Libby's phone and is the last individual to have contact with the victims. That is an identification claim. And when the only eyewitnesses who saw a bridge guy face to face describe a man who looks nothing like the suspect, and the detective leaves that description out of the affidavit, the identification claim is built on a gap the judge was never told existed. The defense argues further that the fact Liggett made the same type of misrepresentation twice, attributing a blue jacket to both Carbro and Allen when neither said it, shows more than reckless disregard. It shows a pattern directed at one conclusion, putting Allen in bridge guy's clothes. An appellate court will decide who is right. But when the one eyewitness who saw a bridge guy on the bridge describes a man in his 20s with poofy brown hair, and the detective leaves that out of the warrant for a 44-year-old man with a crew cut, that's not a peripheral detail. That is the central question of identity in a case where identity is everything and the judge never got to weigh it. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. I'd love for you to weigh in, and we will continue our conversation there. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hey, everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.